warning. The following program is serious about wine, but doesn't take wine too seriously. It might make you laugh, or thirsty, or both. Sorry if we make you spit.
Before this is over, I'm going to need a whole lot of serious therapy.
This is Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson.
You know, it happens every day, and I like to call it wine lover's remorse. It's when pricey bottles of wine that you purchased at the winery just don't seem as exciting as they were when you were standing in the tasting room talking about terroir, vintages, and varietals. That wine couldn't have been more delicious, and you were determined to score a case of it, even if you had to give up lattes for 6 months to help pay for it. So what happened? How could something that was so irresistible just a few days before suddenly be singularly unimpressive? Well, actually, it may not be a problem with the wine. Instead, your disappointment could be the result of a variety of factors that can have a profound impact on your wine enjoyment. So once you understand them, there's a lot you can do to turn something bad into something great, and something great into something off the charts. Now, this is a topic that I really love to talk about, and I love to share my thoughts on this at least every year or so. I call it tips to make your wine taste even better, regardless of what's in the bottle. Now, the first thing that you can do is raise expectations, because raising expectations really can improve the taste of the wine. Think about it. If someone you consider to be credible tells you that the wine you're about to taste is not the least bit pleasant, then your lowered expectations will have you primed for an underwhelming experience. But on the other hand, if you're told that a wine has received rave reviews from critics, you're probably going to like it, even if it's actually less than stellar. Now, if you fancy yourself as something of a wine aficionado, you may take exception to the notion that you, yes you, are not vulnerable to the power of suggestion. But while there are certainly those among us who can't be swayed by glowing misrepresentations, even highly credible wine critics have been known to succumb to suggestion. Now, let me throw just a little documentation behind that. There's a researcher by the name of Frédéric Brochet. He's at the University of Bordeaux, and he did this rather devious study where a group of wine experts were served wines from two different bottles. The first bottle was labeled as an exceptional Grand Cru, and the second was a rather modest table wine. Predictably, the pricey Grand Cru received rave reviews filled with glowing adjectives. And as for that lowly table wine, well, the experts largely panned it. They called it flat, light, weak, and faulty. Now, this might not seem surprising, except the two wines that were served were exactly the same. Okay, call me unkind and maybe even sadistic, but there's something perversely pleasurable about seeing an expert with egg on his or her face. Now, there are a couple of lessons to be learned here. First, don't let reviews rule your life. Second, you might want to use the power of suggestion to your advantage. If you're serving wine to guests, talk it up before you pour it. Who knows, you might be able to earn rave reviews without breaking the bank. Now, there's certainly little doubt that a high price tag can significantly influence our perception of quality. But is a $100 bottle of wine really better than a $25 bottle of wine? Well, a study by the California Institute of Technology will give you plenty to ponder. Now, similar to the Brochet study, Caltech researchers gave members of a study group the exact same wine in two different bottles. Subjects were told that the wine sold for drastically different prices. You guessed it, the study participants showed an overwhelming preference for what they thought was the good stuff. So simply put, if you want to make sure that the wine you're going to serve gets resounding approval, you might want to use one of these lines. And if you listen carefully to my suggestions, you'll see you don't even have to lie. So here's the first one. I hope you like this wine, because money was no object. Or how about this one? It was beyond my budget, but when I tasted it, I just had to get you some. Okay, now on to my next suggestion on how to make wine taste better without touching what's inside the bottle. I'd like to call this tip, serve up class in just the right glass. Now, drinking wine from the right glass can make a big difference, but that doesn't mean you need to invest in Waterford Crystal. It just means that you should give a little thought to the shape of things. Wine glasses really were designed so that the shape of the bowl and rim expose more or less of the wine to the air, concentrating or dissipating aroma and bouquet. Now, the shapes of a wine glass can also affect how and where different wines come into contact with your palate. Now, admittedly, this can be both expensive and complicated, but here are the basics. First, red wine should be served in a glass that has a bigger bowl and wider opening. That allows you to experience more of the wine's aroma, while white wine should be served in a glass with a narrower bowl and a smaller opening to help the wine stay cooler and preserve its more delicate aromas. As for champagne, never, and I mean never, serve it in those wide-mouth glasses you might see at weddings. It amazes me that people still do that. Those are martini glasses. Those are not champagne glasses. Champagne should always be served in a tall, narrow glass that keeps the bubbles from dissipating prematurely. Now, having said that, and in an effort to keep you from writing me and telling me that I am wrong about the champagne flutes, there was a study late last year that showed that champagne actually tastes better in a regular wine glass, and that's a test I still haven't put champagne to, so I'm working on it. Okay, now on to suggestion number 4, and I call it not too hot and not too cold. Now, if there's one generalization that I can safely make about how we serve our wine, in terms of temperature, that is, it would be this. We serve our white wine way too cold and our red wines too warm. Now, I really hope you'll take this seriously because when it comes to wine, temperature really is a big deal. So here's what you need to know. If it has bubbles, serve it chilled. Unless, of course, you're pouring it into the bathtub, as I often do. Now, chill champagne and sparkling wines in the refrigerator for about an hour and a half. Or you can put it in an ice bucket that also contains water for about 20 minutes. But remember this, before serving it, let the bubbly warm up just a bit, especially the higher-end vintages. Now, wines like Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Grigio, White Zinfandel, and other refreshing sweet or crisp white wines should also be refrigerated to about 35 to 40 degrees. On the other hand, Chardonnay, White Burgundy, and other full-bodied barrel-fermented wines should be served warmer. Now, if you're one of the few unlucky ones in the world who doesn't have a wine cellar, well, that's actually 99.99% of the population, just put your wine in the fridge for about, 1 to 2 hours, and then once again, let it sit out for about 20 minutes before you actually serve it. Now, as for red wines, it's really super simple. Red wines are best at 65 degrees, not the room temperature. So for best results, just refrigerate your red wines for a few minutes and then serve. But just a few minutes, okay? Okay, now on to my next suggestion. I like to call it, watch what you put in your mouth. Now, when foodies and wine lovers talk about wine pairings, they generally focus on what wines and foods best complement one another. What you seldom hear them talking about is food and wine pairings to avoid. So here's the biggest don't of them all. Never put, and I mean never put, anything minty in your mouth if you're going to be drinking wine. No gum, no mints, no peppermint, anything. Now, vinegar is almost equally bad. Vinegar is what I like to call the anti-wine, and it'll make even the best wine taste unpleasant. So don't eat anything with vinegar when you're drinking wine. No vinegar in the salad dressing or marinade. Nothing pickled. And if you're looking for a light dressing, why not substitute real wine for the vinegar or play it safe with ranch? If mint vinegar or other strong flavors are unavoidable, do yourself a big favor and eat a cracker or a piece of bread before you first sip. It's so simple and very effective. Now, on to my next suggestion, one of my favorite things to talk about, and that is match the wine to the music that you're playing. Now, some people go to an awful lot of trouble to create just the right ambiance, and ambiance does matter, but the relationship between wine and music is even more significant than you think. At least that was a conclusion of a study at Harriet Watt University in Edinburgh. The study was conducted on behalf of a renowned Chilean winemaker by the name of Aurelio Montes, and the Edinburgh researchers discovered that the style of music played had a dramatic impact on the study group's perception of wines they were served. For instance, when a powerful heavy piece of music is played, big red wines such as Cabernet Sauvignon and other bold Bordeaux are perceived as being, get this, as much as 60% more powerful, rich, and robust. And conversely, white wines were rated 40% more zingy and refreshing when zingy and refreshing music was played. So after the study was over, the folks at Montes Wines put together a suggestion list of some varietals of music that pair very well together. Now, here are some of their suggestions. For Cabernet Sauvignon, All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix. There must be some kind of way out of here. Honky Tonk Women from the Rolling Stones. Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney. Or Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who. We don't get fooled again. For Chardonnay, they suggest songs like Atomic by Blondie, Rock DJ by Robbie Williams, What's Love Got to Do With It by Tina Turner, and Spinning Around by Kylie Minogue. Now for Syrah, they suggest anything Puccini, Ornical Flow from Enya, Chariots of Fire by Vangelis, and Canon in D by Pachelbel. And finally, Merlot. They like Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding, Easy by Lionel Richie, Over the Rainbow by the late Ava Cassidy, and Heartbeats by Jose Gonzalez. Well, I think I have time for just one more, so this is one of my favorites, and I call it Coloring Your Wine Perception. Now, it's long been accepted that the color of a drink affects our perception of taste. Color definitely is one of those things that tasters consider when sampling wines. But how do the colors in a room affect us? Well, I'm glad you asked. Researchers in Germany at Johannes Gutenberg University wanted to see if the color of ambient lighting had any impact on our perception of a wine's taste. So test subjects were put in a room with ambient colored lighting and asked to evaluate the wine. And in fact, study participants found the Riesling to be much tastier when they were exposed to blue or red background lighting. Green and white lighting had exactly the opposite effect. So, simply add some blue or red to the table setting, along with a bouquet of red roses in the center. Change the table linens to a more complementary shade, and while you're at it, you don't have to paint the walls, you just have to put one red light bulb in the lamp. Just make sure it's not in front of the window. All right, we'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this.
Wine.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out winetalkshow.com. At winetalkshow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at winetalkshow.com.
As a Grape Encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
This is Grape Encounters News, a taste of what's happening in the world of wine.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grape.
And we are back with Grape Encounters Radio, and now time for the Grape Encounters News, and it is mostly good news, I think, that will be rolling off the tongue of our chief wine news correspondent,
quite an image.
Larry Gifford. Not just news rolling off your tongue today. What is that? It looks like maybe just a bit of Cabernet as well.
Oh, hey, excuse me.
All right.
So, David, last week we told you about Bud Break in New York. We now have Bud Break all over California, too.
It wasn't just buds that were breaking in New York, but hearts that were breaking as well, because, you know, what happens is you get bud break and then you get frost.
Yeah, so California wine growers reporting all across the state from Temecula Valley to Mendocino County up north that the buds are breaking, but it's early. So they've got the sprinklers out and the wind machines are being called into action on those chilly nights to battle the frost. And
this can be a really big problem. I mean, it can be catastrophic because we're only sitting at the beginning of March right now. And if the weather turns cold, and it can all the way up to May, if there's a really severe chill, that means those buds will freeze. They'll die, and a good part of the productivity of those grapevines is going to be compromised.
Well, and last year they had to pick early in August a lot of grape growers were picking in August, and it messed up all their routines.
The whole world is totally screwed up. Things were so much better before Al Gore started talking about global warming, and now look what's happening.
I know.
It's what you call a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is. Do you remember Rob Eichard?
Yes, I do.
From back in November?
President and CEO of the, what was it, Tennessee Grocers and Convenience Stores
Association.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Yeah, back in November, you talked to him because voters in Tennessee were voting on a measure to allow wine sales in grocery stores. It passed.
And I know. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so now 270 stores have raised their hand saying, yep, we're going to stock wine. They're ready to do it.
Count us in.
But under the new regulations, alcohol sales at grocery stores can't begin in Tennessee until July of 2016.
What is that about?
I don't know. It seems ridiculous.
It's so completely bizarre, but, you know, something's better than nothing.
That's right.
And we're finally getting past these prohibition-era laws, which, frankly, we use prohibition as an excuse because a lot of the laws were just designed to create monopolies and allow certain people to make a lot of money and give the government more control over things that they really shouldn't. You know, going back to the Tennessee story for just a second, one of the things that Rob Eichert had pointed out was the fact that when you want a bottle of wine to go with your dinner, and let's say you have a couple of kids in tow, you have to take your kids and drag them to something that's totally a liquor store.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's all this hard liquor and people standing right outside the front door with something in a paper bag.
Yeah, that's true.
And safety pins in their nose and stuff like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Good gracious.
An element that we wine drinkers would prefer not to see and especially not want our children to see. I just went off on that.
You just went off on a tangent. I don't know that I mind people with nose rings drinking alcohol.
It wasn't a nose ring. It was a safety pin.
Oh, a safety pin.
All right. Go on with the news.
In New Mexico, the state Senate has approved a measure to legalize home delivery of wine and beer. The state's
House. Now you're talking.
Yeah. So the state's House of Representatives now gets to vote on it. So it's up to the House to bring it home. You like that one?
It's up to the House to bring it home. Love it. Okay.
Yeah. 32 states already have approved home delivery sales of wine and beer.
How is it in California?
I do not think you can deliver in California, but you can in Washington State. I used to get it delivered to me when I lived in Seattle.
I'm sure you did.
I did.
Okay.
I know you have real passion and opinions about the 100-point wine scale.
Oh, you're not going here, are you?
I am. Forbes magazine was curious about it, too. And they wondered what exactly distinguishes a 100-point wine from a 90-point wine. And it turns out not very much. According to the Wine Advocate and Robert Parker's quality rating scale, the 10 points from 90 to 100 reflect a wine's ability to age. So if a wine is a 90 and ready to drink, it's essentially a 100.
So that's completely and totally ridiculous. Can I just go off for
Please,
a second?
David, the floor is yours.
It's not a 100-point score. And why don't they just say it? It's a 20-point score, okay? Let me say that. Nobody gets a score under 80. Just doesn't happen.
I think if I made a wine, they'd give it a 60.
Nobody's ever got a 60. You could drink... I was going to say something I can't say on the air, but you could drink that and it wouldn't get a 60. The scores really start at 80 and they go to 100. And so it's really a 20-point score and it's completely and totally ridiculous. And we put too much faith in that system. I think it's important for wines to get good scores, but just bear in mind that an 85, let's say, score, that's like a D in my book.
Right.
I'm not even buying that wine. You know, 89, 90, you know, it's a B minus in my book. And then as you get up into the 92, 93, yeah, we're talking some good wine, but that's just one person's opinion.
Right. So for clarification, Forbes notes that Wine Spectator scale is a little different, but they wouldn't comment on the story.
They wouldn't.
They wouldn't.
Okay.
So I'm going to need your help on this last story too, David.
What's that?
Vinthesis. It's the latest trend in wine.
You're doing a story on vinthesis?
It was created by the host of this radio show, David Wilson.
Me. That's right.
And the listeners may have read it on any number of the hundreds of websites that picked up the story last week. David, What is vinthesis?
It was hundreds of websites, television station websites, radio stations, newspapers, magazines, you name it. The story was pervasive throughout all of North America and in European countries as well.
Awesome.
We have started the trend.
Let's talk about it.
We can't. We have to go to commercial break. So how about this? What if I don't just talk about it? What if I show you? In fact, I'll let you do it.
No, wait. I'm honored.
All right, it's going to be all about Vinthesis when we return with Grape Encounters Radio. And this is a segment that is going to set you free. It's Larry, Vinthesis, and me.
We like to talk about wine.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is, you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to grapeencounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At grapeencounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift from EpicStyle.com. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a little bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Learn more about the Coravin at grapeencounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com.
He's a trailblazer, a maverick, a rebel. Here's David Wilson.
Back with Grape Encounters Radio. This was the time on the show that we were going to do an interview with a tribe of pygmies that are actually making mango wine in the Amazon. But Larry asked the burning question, what is Vinthesis?
Well, let me ask it again.
Okay, go ahead.
David, what is Vinthesis?
I'm glad you asked. Well, no, you brought it up because probably the number one wine news story in terms of coverage was about Vinthesis, a concept that we have launched here at Grape Encounters Radio and at the Grape Encounters Emporium Wine Bar. And for those who may be new to the show, we are not just a radio show about wine. We are also a radio show that operates a very unique wine bar that is practicing the art of vinthesis, which is a word that describes the process of taking wines that are made all around the world and combining them as we see fit into, let's just say, a horse of a different color.
So are you re-blending blends?
No, never. That gets too complicated because, for one thing, we don't always know what's in somebody else's blend. But as you know, so many winemakers now are blending wine. And we've been blending wine since the beginning of time. And so much of the wines that come out of places like Bordeaux were always blends, but within that particular family of wines. So, you know, you had Cabernet, you had Cab Franc, Sauvignon Blanc, Petit Verdot, Malbec, Merlot, for instance, in that family. And it was perfectly acceptable to blend them in different proportions to create something different. You know, it'd be like the difference between doing a charcoal drawing in just black charcoal and then making one using a lot of different colors.
Sure.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
And so here in the States, blending was done much more covertly. And that's because we have a law that says that for a wine to be called a Cabernet or a Chardonnay or any single varietal wine, the bottle has to contain 75% at least least of that particular varietal that you're calling it on the label, but you can add anything else you want, along with about 200 additives that you do not have to disclose to make that wine, and you can call it a Cabernet, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
And so that's how it was here, but then we began blending wines as well. There was a movement that took place some years ago to create something called Meritage wines. And if you see that term, M-E-R-I-T-A-G-E.
I always thought it was Meritage.
It's not Meritage. You know, we want to give it a French sound, but it really is Meritage. And Meritage simply means that we're taking Bordeaux varietals and blending them, but we can't use the word Bordeaux here. We can say Bordeaux varietals.
Right.
Okay. So we came up with our own term here in the States called Meritage, which just means that the wine is made from a variety of Bordeaux varietals. That sounds redundant, but sure, that's what it is. And that's what those are. But it wasn't until recently, and I really want to say the last 10 years, but more specifically the last 5 years, that we've been seeing blends kind of overtaking a lot of the shelf space now in, you know, wine stores, grocery stores, et cetera, because people are beginning to learn that the blends generally taste better than the single varietals in many cases.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, if you've got a great Cabernet and it's the end all to beat all, you're not going to screw around with it. But a lot of wine can be improved by combining it with other wine. The problem is this: the winemaker who is working on a particular wine or even a particular blend really has to deal with the hand he's been dealt. And that means that if he's got a good Cabernet and a, you know, not particularly great Merlot, and he's got a Malbec that's, you know, pretty decent, whatever the case may be, it's what he's grown. And I shouldn't say he, because there's an awful lot of female winemakers out there that are doing an amazing job. But that winemaker has to deal with the hand that he has been dealt. That's what he's going to be playing. But from the consumer standpoint, you have literally tens of thousands of wines to choose from. So what is preventing anybody that's listening to this show from modifying their wine, improving it, playing with it? Maybe you'll ruin it. You know, we really don't know. But with a little bit of knowledge and a little less fear about wine being sacred, you can create some absolutely amazing things. So that's what we're doing with Vinthesis. It's really encouraging people to do with wine what they do at Starbucks. When you go into Starbucks, one person wants their cappuccino with 2% milk. One wants it with skim milk. One wants it with whole milk. One wants half calf, half decaf. You know, one wants a lot of foam. One wants just a little bit of foam. One wants sugar. One wants Splenda. One wants a squirt of caramel sauce.
Right.
And we go into a place like Starbucks, and we're getting very used to customizing things. I mean, look at your telephone case. Nobody's got the same case. Everybody's got to have a different case than their friends have, because we like things customized to our own personal taste. And I believe that wine is really poised to go down the same road, but it's not as easy as putting a case on your iPhone. You need to know a little bit about the wine in order to do that. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is that why I've got graduated cylinders in front
of me? Yes, you are sitting a few feet away from me. We are in the Grape Encounters bar, as a matter of fact, right now. And Larry has graduated cylinders, you know, the kind of professional tools that a winemaker would use. And then what I've given you is I've poured you a pretty decent, modestly priced selection of wines. And from left to right, those wines are a California Grenache. The second wine is a Syrah, also made in California. The third wine is a Cabernet, but it's made in Chile, and you're sniffing each one of them. And the fourth wine is a Malbec that came from Argentina.
Oh, okay.
Now, these wines have the potential to be blended together in a very nice way. And I'm not suggesting that you just arbitrarily dump them all together, but let's start with the basics.
Okay.
Okay, so the Grenache and the Syrah are from the Rhone family. They blend nicely together. You're seeing a lot of Grenache and Syrah blends. Sometimes there's Mourvèdre and other wines in there. So go ahead and pour in the graduated cylinder about 20 milliliters of, and it's marked on the side there, Larry. You see it?
Okay.
20 milliliters of the Grenache. Okay. That's perfect. Okay. Now pour just another 20 milliliters of the Syrah.
Okay.
So we're going to start with the basics. Okay. You know, not all wines are going to
blend the same way because all wines taste different.
My hands are shaking. I'm nervous.
I know. But
I
and,
feel like,
and you want to be
like
precise.
I'm committing blasphemy.
So this is just a starting spot, okay?
Who am I offending right now? I feel like winemakers are going to come down from the
Well, we didn't tell whose wines we were blending here, okay? But I took some, you know, nice kind of mainstream wines here, and we've blended them together. And you tasted the Grenache during the break. I gave you a little taste of that, and you tasted a little bit of the Syrah. And what did you think of those two wines?
So the Grenache was good, but it was pleasant, but it was a little harsh. And then the Syrah was much more round.
Lush and fruity, lush, and you know, yeah. could really taste the fruit. It was a very, what we call, fruit-forward wine. That Grenache, a much lighter wine, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes.
But still a little more abrasive, I would just
Astringent.
Say. Now taste what you've created and hand me a glass, would you?
Oh, here
it is. Right, reach up. Okay. All right. I got it. Okay.
Got it? Don't spill it.
All right. All right. So I'm going to take a little sip now. Wouldn't you agree that what you've created is better than either of those wines by themselves?
No, that was 50-50, right?
That was 50-50. But now
you can't do that with everything.
No, you can't do that with everything, but that was a nice starting spot.
Sure.
And you could now back off or back down. It's a question of, is there just the right amount of fruit in it now? Has it toned down that Grenache that you found to be just a little bit on the harsh side? Is it a more pleasant and enjoyable wine? Would you enjoy drinking this?
I would.
Rather than either of the other two wines?
I think I would.
Okay.
It's more complex, but in a good way.
So now what I want you to do is this. We're going to go to a different family of wines now.
Okay.
And we're going to go to the Rhone family. You've got a 50-50 mix of Grenache and Syrah there. Why don't you go ahead and pour that into the graduated cylinder. Pour 20 milliliters of that, just a little tiny bit, okay? Now pour about half again as much of the Cabernet.
Of the Cab?
Okay. Of the Cabernet and pour it in there. And this is just, okay, well, that was a lot more than half, okay?
No, it was.
All right. All right.
Did I just ruin it?
Probably.
Okay.
But just go ahead and give it a little swizzle and pour it into a decanter. And would you pour me a little bit of that and pour yourself a little bit of that? And let's see how it's changed. You're going to have to experiment a lot with this.
So you need to buy some wine.
Yeah, buy some just decent, fairly inexpensive wine so you get the hang of it. But now what have you got?
I like that. I think I didn't ruin it.
No, that's actually really quite good. But actually, in reality, you have about 50% Cabernet in here and about 25% Grenache. And about 25% Syrah.
Okay.
I saw you. I saw you do it.
I'm a Cab fan, so it doesn't bother
okay.
me.
But the point is this, you don't have an abomination in your glass, do you?
No, not at all.
These are wines that'll work well together. Go ahead and in your glass, pour about 5 milliliters of the Malbec. Yeah, just about 5. That's it. Now pour that into your glass and give it a swizzle, okay?
Okay, give it a swizzle.
Right. Now give that a taste. Now what happened?
Whoa, that was really cool. It like opened up and sort of softened a little bit. But
yeah, that's a really soft Malbec and it's in the family, you know, the same family as the Cabernet. But it's really good, isn't it?
It is delicious.
Okay, so here's the point. First thing you do is really study when you go into a wine store or wherever you buy your wine. Look at the blended wines and look at the percentages that they're putting of different single varietals in there. And, you know, take some notes. The recipes are actually there. You know, the wine you choose is going to very much determine what's going to happen. And one wine that's wrong for this mix is going to screw it up. But you really want to be sensitive to alcohol, to tannins. You want to be sensitive to the sugar in the wine, and you also want to be sensitive to the fruit in the wine. And fruit and sugar are not the same thing.
Okay.
Because you can have a bone dry wine that has a lot of what appears to be sweetness to it, and yet it's just phantom sweetness because you're so used to associating sweetness with fruit and vice versa that you're thinking that it's fruity and sweet when really it might just be fruity. Okay.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
But those are the, you know, basic elements that you want to balance. And the idea is to play with them. And of course, the flavor profiles as well, to the point where you're using the same techniques that you use creating a cappuccino or a latte.
Can you do this with white wine?
Of course.
Well, it's not an of course. It's
no,
the first time I've done it. I do it with red.
Yes, you certainly can do it with white wine. And not only that, you can mix red and white.
No.
Yes, because some rosés, not most, but some rosés are actually made from a blend of red and white. white wine.
And if people want you to do this for them, they can have that happen.
Yeah, they can come to the Grape Encounters Emporium in Atascadero, California, and I will do it for you.
Wow!
I will do it for you for the cost of a glass of wine.
Yeah, I would rather have you do this for me than me try to screw it up.
I want you to take home some wine.
Okay.
You're going to pay for it, though.
Oh, okay.
And no discounts for you, pal. Anyway, take home some wines and start blending and start having fun with it.
Oh, this is great, David. Thank you.
It is fun, and it's liberating. And if you go and you look at the reviews that we're getting on Yelp from people who are tasting the Vinthesis wines, it's uniformly 100% five stars. They love it. And it's because they've never had a glass of wine that has wines from three different continents, that may be from five different countries. You know, we're very systematic about how we do this. We don't just willy-nilly blend wine together, but just think of it. The winemaker may have 6 or 12 or 20 crayons to draw with. We have all the wines in the world in our crayon box. And so I think this is the next big wave in wine and the wine world. And frankly, the people who are applauding it the most are the winemakers themselves.
Oh, congratulations. You are now a wine artiste.
I may actually get shot on the street by some deranged winemaker who says, "You do not play with my wine."
Well, you should have all the listeners send in their recipes after they experiment.
Yeah, but you know what I say to that winemaker that's sitting there holding a gun pointed at my chest? Just one word. One word, and it shuts him right down.
Okay.
Don't you want to know what the word is?
I do. I'm waiting.
Kevlar. That's it. I got a Kevlar vest. All right, we'll be back with more Grape Encounters Radio right after this.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a little bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Learn more about the Coravin at GrapeEncounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com.
Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift from EpicStyle.com. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is, you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to GrapeEncounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At GrapeEncounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
She once described a wine as a dusty old trunk from the attic, and we were all glad she was doing the sipping. It's Sipping with Sarah, with Sunset Magazine's Sarah Schneider, on Grape Encounters Radio.
And time for Sipping with Sarah. Sarah, you are probably, I imagine, I've never been in the tasting room with you.
That's true.
But I'm guessing that you are Miss Manners in a tasting room.
Is that true or not?
Or do you actually get up on the bar and dance?
I haven't done any bar dancing. I actually like to be a fly on the wall and watch other people in tasting rooms.
Really?
I do.
Okay. So let's talk today about tasting room etiquette.
Okay.
Because, first of all, the tasting room of today is nothing like the tasting room of 20 years
ago.
No,
not at all.
Completely different. And things have loosened up a lot. Because I used to hate to go into tasting rooms because it was like, oh my gosh, I was afraid to open my mouth. Because there was always that guy there who was trying to impress his girlfriend.
And he knew
brought
more
her
than
there
you
in
did.
The Porsche that he rented from the exotic car rental place. And then he would throw out lingo that nobody understood. And that was the last date she ever went on with him.
I think a few people still use wine tasting and visiting wine regions to sort of pump up their egos. But I think that's a smaller and smaller piece of the pie. And most people who go out wine tasting are just seriously interested, and serious is probably the wrong word. They're out to enjoy themselves discovering.
Well, one of the things that has changed in the tasting room world is the word tasting, because a lot of tasting rooms now offer you the opportunity to buy a glass of wine. And
that's true.
You can go sit out on some beautiful patio, you know, with water trickling in a fountain, and they've created wonderful environments. They have cheese and charcuterie plates that they offer.
Buy the bottle and take it out on
and
patio.
Yes, that's become a very popular theme. And I do think tasting rooms have become a lot more like, say, Barnes & Noble and Starbucks, in the sense that businesses used to want you to come, spend your money, and go. And now the theme is come and stay as long as you like.
You know, I think there's been so much research on marketing wine through tasting rooms in a way, and how people behave in tasting rooms. So behind the business is that wineries make a lot more money on bottles they sell directly to their customers in the tasting room than bottles that go through the distribution system where middlemen get the cuts. So it's become a more and more important part of their business model. And I think that they figured out that the longer people hang out in their space, the more wine they're likely to take away with
well,
them.
Well, and this is almost going to sound derogatory, but it's really not meant to be. There is a camaraderie, I think, that wineries now are trying to build with their customers, and that naturally translates into wine club members.
Yes, it does.
You know, the people come to like the people that are associated with the winery. And what's not to like? Because people who work in wineries tend to be really nice people.
They are nice people.
You know, they got a great job.
And they building relationships is what they're there for.
And why not? And why not join the club? Although I will say this, that before you join the wine club, because a lot of people join wine clubs out of guilt, and a lot of people join wine clubs because they've been to the tasting room, they've enjoyed the wines, and now they're lured in by the 30% discount that they're going to get on that case of wine if they join the wine club and take three deliveries, which is going to totally eat up the 30% discount that you're going to get. So be a little careful of that.
The pressure of the moment is high. That's for sure.
But I'm glad that tasting rooms mostly charge now. Because I'm glad because you know what? No guilt. It's like I paid for it. I paid for the taste. If I don't like the wine, I'm going to go. You don't write my name down. Don't take my picture. Don't badmouth me on Facebook.
I completely agree. I'm happy to pay for tasting. And it's also a way for them to pull out the frat parties and the bridesmaids parties that are just there to party.
A tasting room is not a party room, although a lot of wineries now have places for you to laugh and giggle and have fun and create experiences.
Sure. I actually think one of the great things wineries have learned is that people come for different levels of tasting and experiences, and one size doesn't fit all. I think wineries have figured out that they can have a sit-down guided tasting. They can have a sit-down served but not guided tasting. They can have tasting just at the bar, or they can have a whole food experience. There are a couple of old wineries up in Oregon in the Willamette Valley who have opened these new tasting rooms that offer just tiers of experiences in different spaces, and everybody's having a good time. I'm thinking of Ponzi, old Oregon name, and Sokol Blosser. Also an old Oregon name, and they both have just sleek, new, high-design tasting rooms.
A lot of these old wineries are reinventing themselves.
Right.
Which is very exciting. All right, let's do this. I want to play a little game with you. So we're going to do tasting room do's and don'ts.
Okay.
And you can say do or don't, and I'll have to give you a do or a don't in a tasting room, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Don't.
Don't get drunk.
Oh, absolutely.
That is the worst possible etiquette. That's my number one.
Okay, your turn.
Do.
Spit.
Related to number one.
Yeah, definitely spit. especially if you don't like it. Look at, you know what? Don't think that because you paid $10 or $20 for the tasting experience that you have to swallow every drop. Don't.
Don't bring your kids and ignore them in the tasting room and let them run around bothering everybody else.
I was going to say don't have kids.
Oh, dear.
You're going to be a wine lover.
It's too late for me.
No, sorry. Okay, your turn.
Don't.
Don't brush your teeth, chew gum, gargle, or use cologne when going to a tasting room.
That is four or five good ones. Absolutely.
All true.
All true, especially that scent thing. Don't even wash your hands with scented soap that's going to bother. Put lavender in the neighbor's wine.
Do
treat the people pouring behind the bar as the experts on the wine and not yourself. I've seen so many people belly up to the bar and start asking questions that are just calculated to let everybody in the room know how much they know. And honestly, nobody knows. You may know a lot about wine, but you don't know the specifics of this wine. Trust the people behind the bar.
That's okay. Right. All right. I think that was very constructive, Sarah.
I feel instructed.
All right. Very good. All right. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters today. That was fun. Sarah, I say we go wine tasting right now.
I'm ready.
Okay. We'll see y'all next week.
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.
We like to talk about wine.